So we're going to start out with a little bit of philosophy, justifying the set of problems that we've studied, and then talk a little bit about these problems. So, as always, this work is predominantly the work of others, and the one person who I wanted to highlight is Wenyi Zhang, who's a postdoc in the group. Wenyi, could you just raise your hand? Very smart fellow here. If you have any questions about one of the problems, he's the fellow that we're going to direct them to. So, generally, when we think of a sensor network, we envision a collection of nodes that have some sort of connections to them. And what has been classically considered is an environment in which what you want to sense generally is extrinsic to the network, and so you're going to take some observations and potentially process them in the nodes or send some processed version of those observations somewhere else. So I'm going to argue that for a lot of applications of interest, not all nodes are going to be actively participating in the sensing activity, and that the role that they are going to play is going to be communication. And so it behooves us to consider both sensing and communication problems, but also communication problems solely in the sensor network environment. And that's essentially the starting point that we have here. So if I were smart about computers, I could align things up. So you're all going to have to just, you know, do some noisy decoding here for things that are off on the sign. So the notion here, for example, is that maybe these red nodes and these red links are actively collecting information about the elephant, but everybody else is really just going to participate in a communication exercise. And again, to underscore, what also drives this type of work is, of course, the notion that the fact that we have this limited battery power is going to impose limits on our communication, sensing, and computation. But on the other hand, a large number or density of nodes is going to offer us some opportunities. So from a communications perspective, one of the things that's very interesting and exciting about the sensor network framework is this notion that nodes can possibly cooperate with each other in order to achieve a communication goal. All right? And so loosely, the motivation for this is that, well, we've had a lot of success with multi-antenna systems for wireless communications. Can we translate some of those ideas to the sensor network environment where collections of sensors behave like a virtual antenna array in order to do MIMO-type communication? And are there ways in which we can design this such that we get gains comparable to what we see in a multi-antenna environment? Now, related to this is how many nodes should cooperate, all right? And I'm going to, I think, take a tack that is perhaps somewhat different from what has been espoused by good friends and colleagues so far here. But I don't think anyone's actually been controversial yet, have they? I don't know, but I'm going to attempt to do that a little bit. And so, you know, a lot of the work, very fine work that has happened, especially from the mathematical perspective on sensor networks, has been really focused on, well, you know, what happens when the network scales, what happens when you have a large number of nodes. And I'm going to contend that there are two different scales that we need to worry about when it comes to cooperative communications, and let me make my point in the following picture here. So a common environment that has been considered from this sort of scaling point of view is, you know, one source, one destination, and what happens if this collection of nodes in the middle who are cooperating together to help you to transmit this information grow without bound? What kinds of interesting things can we say? Interesting problem, but I think perhaps not very practical. All right. So another scaling problem that I would encourage you to think about is the environment in which the number of nodes that are cooperating are actually modest, but the network might still scale. So one view of this is this kind of cooperative relay network where the number of stages, if you will, grows very large. Okay? And that, I think, is something that is very likely to happen. And so what you see here is essentially what I would call a multi-hop network, right? To get from source to destination, I have to go through these many stages. And so this is essentially the motivating discussion, if you will, for the sets of problems that I want to share with you today, two of which I'm going to argue are fairly unconventional from the multi-hopping community and the sensor network community, and the last one perhaps a little more conventional. So the progression that we would like to make, or the story that we would like to tell, is to say, well, you know, this single hop network is something that has been very well studied from a variety of perspectives. Multiple hops has been studied from some key perspectives, although not as much in the context of what we're going to study, much to our surprise. And really what we want to do is make our way down to this environment here, where we have both cooperation and multiple hops. So, of course, there are a lot of different questions that we can ask ourselves in this context. You know, what's the capacity of this type of system? And I would say even this notion of capacity is an interesting one. What kind of capacity are we talking about? Is it the classical, you know, information Shannon theoretic capacity? Is it sensing capacity? Is something coupled with that? How do we achieve that? Because of the fact that we have these multiple intermediate nodes, one of the things that we have to ask ourselves is, what is the type of processing that we do at each of the nodes? And especially when we try to come up with bounds on what is achievable, the processing that we impose at these intermediate nodes is often going to, of course, specify the bound that we can achieve. So, you know, how do complexity and power, et cetera, impact this processing? And I think perhaps the most important question that we can ask is, if I make this progression, single hop, multi-hop, cooperative multi-hop, what do we really gain and is it worth it, right? And to give away the punchline, the basic, you know, the one thing I want you to walk away from this, from the three very disparate problems we're going to consider, is that multi-hopping is not always a good thing. And part of our job as information theorists, communication theorists, or whatever, is to establish the regimes in which this is a good thing to do, all right? And we actually don't have the answer to this, in large part because so many things come into play. And so when you look at these different problems that I'm going to share with you, you'll see that we're touching on different aspects, but ultimately, we need to take a much more holistic view and consider a lot of these things simultaneously if we can. So let me first start by saying, yes, there are certainly environments and stories for which multi-hopping is a very, very good thing to do. So I have a very simple environment here, which I will show here, where I have one source, one destination. The source essentially broadcasts signals to its nearest neighbors. Those neighbors decode, if you will, or demodulate the information and retransmit it, and this continues as we go along. From a communication theory perspective, what we're doing is relatively simple. We do a form of maximal ratio combining at each receiving node, and including the effects of error propagation, which is very important to the study, we're trying to assess what do we gain from multi-hopping, all right? Are the effects of multi-hopping going to help us because potentially our SNR per link is much higher than if I take a direct hop, and we can do a Markov chain analysis. Now the picture I have here is for a very extreme environment. We started to do some work in underwater acoustic communications in which the propagation effects are so hostile that you experience significant signal degradation as a function of the distance that you travel. And this is due to a complicated set of effects. And what we see here is for a very modest network, we're looking at the inter-node distance changing. It's getting larger and larger as a function of what we call the multi-hopping gain, which is essentially the probability of error for the direct hop case with no cooperation divided by the probability of error if I have N hops and K nodes cooperating. You see two sets of lines. The essentially horizontal lines correspond to communication over the air, wireless communications, where we have the usual 1 over d squared propagation. And here we have the more complicated underwater thing. And so if you look at the y-axis here, you probably can't see this, but these are some scarily large numbers. And we're going 10 to the 5, 10 to the 10, et cetera. Due to the fact that the channel is so bad, right, we can get a significant amount of gains by multi-hopping. The reason why we have plotted things as a function of inter-node distance is because in underwater systems, the attenuation that you experience is a function of that distance in a very extreme way, and also is a function of your carrier frequency, and this is a relatively high one here. So I've purposely picked a really bad environment. So one message to walk away with is, well, if your environment is particularly hostile, the gains that you get from multi-hopping can be quite significant. And so perhaps it's worthwhile for us to consider. So, as I said, I'm going to introduce sort of three problems to you. The first two, I think, actually are quite interesting and novel. The first one is Wenyi's work, and I can't take any credit for it. I think it's a very clever thing that he's done. And essentially, I pose the question of, well, you know, we're interested in this multi-hopping thing. What can we say about it, all right? So the solution that he took was the following, and that is we're going to investigate an environment in which we can decode at each of the nodes in a multi-hop network, but of course the processing at every node has some cost associated with it. And the cost that we're going to consider that we don't feel has been given as much justice as other costs is the cost of delay, right? So every time you do a processing at a node, it takes some time to do it, right? And so, you know, we have these two extremes, a single hop situation where, well, there's, you know, in a sense, no delay. The only delay that you have is the propagation delay. On the other hand, if this distance is relatively long, then your end-to-end effective SNR could be potentially bad. So you have this trade-off between delay and reliability. On the other hand, if I take a multi-hop approach, I could possibly be incurring a larger delay because I'm doing all of this processing at every hop. But if these two distances end-to-end are the same, then the effective SNR per link is going to be significantly higher. Right? So this is one loose interpretation. And so the question here is, well, we have many choices in terms of how to capture this delay reliability trade-off. How are we going to do it? And the approach that we've taken is one of essentially coding. And in particular, we're going to look at error exponents. And so this is, you know, I hesitate to even say error exponents 101, it's error exponents 1. So we essentially have the probability of decoding error, and if we can describe it in this exponential form, where n is the Planck length, E of r here is essentially the decay rate and the error exponent that I'm trying to find. The key thing here is that we can determine relationships between the error, the block length and delay, all right, in this particular context. And it comes from the fact that we can look at code lengths and channel uses and tie that to delay. So once we make that connection, we can compare different schemes in terms of their error exponents. So we're going to look at two schemes that are capacity achieving, but they're going to differ in how fast the probability of error goes to zero. Okay, so the first strategy is based on concatenated codes, as introduced by Forney in the 60s. And you can think of this as a packet-based architecture, where essentially we have a set of packets that we're going to send. There's an inner code, and what happens as we're hopping along is that at each node, it decodes the packet inner code, if you will, but there's also a larger code, an outer code on the outside, which codes across packets. Okay? So this is a scheme in which, for those of you who are familiar with this literature, it's kind of a decoding forward scheme, right? At every single node I decode, I re-encode, I send along, and I keep doing this. So as you can imagine, this is going to incur a relatively large delay in the context that I've just described, because of course I'm decoding at every single node. All right? So we can go through and assess what the error exponent is for this type of situation. A key parameter that describes the overall performance of the system is essentially the error exponent associated with what we will call the worst case link. So you get this expression here. And loosely, the key thing to keep in mind here is that this multi-hop system is effectively described by the worst case link. It's not one-to-one, as you can see from this expression here, but essentially the worst case link defines your performance. Okay? So I have this multi-hop case with large delay that performs like a single hop case, right, where I have the worst possible performance. Also, the capacity for this type of scheme is essentially achieved by the capacity of the worst case link as well. Okay, so we can make a few observations. As I said, the scheme is capacity achieving. This is one half right here. If I look at the rate zero environment, it's nearly optimal in that situation in the sense that it's equal to one half. On the other hand, as the rate approaches the capacity of the system, the error exponents quickly decay and get to sort of a worst case situation. So here we have a binary symmetric channel with a probability of 0.1, and you can see at rate equals zero we have one half, but as the rate increases we go quickly to zero. And this is comparing the ratio of the concatenated scheme to the error exponent of the worst case link. Okay, so what's another thing that we could possibly do? So we haven't really done anything yet that allows us to control the delay. And so we want to pick a scheme where we have some ability to control delay to compare these two things. So one option is to get rid of the outer code altogether. And what we do at every possible node is actually make a decision. Am I going to decode, or am I just going to pass the message along? All right? And so this scheme is dubbed pass or decode. And essentially, if you have a collection of nodes that just pass, you can think of that as one super hop here. And in a way, it's equivalent to sort of bypassing everybody in between and just transmitting to a further node away. Okay? So there are several questions that we need to ask ourselves. How do we optimally decide who we're going to bypass, if you will, and where are we going to decode? And is this kind of scheme actually good? Does it gain us anything? Because clearly, we're reducing the total amount of delay by bypassing some nodes, if you will. On the other hand, we're going to take a sacrifice in terms of the reliability. Now, the good news is that this is still capacity achieving, but we'll see that we get some gains. So let's take this simple scheme and consider the case where everybody decodes, all right? Then we can show that the error exponent associated with this, so remember, we don't have that outer code anymore, essentially 1 over k, where k is the number of hops of the error exponent associated with the worst case link. So depending on how many hops I have, I'm either better than the concatenating strategy or I'm worse. Okay. Now, to compute the error exponent for the general k-hop case is very complicated, because essentially you're solving this combinatorial problem, right? You're looking at all possible permutations of pass and decoding and trying to figure out what the best thing is. Now, if all of the hops are identical in their characteristics, there is a linear algorithm, and you can basically determine what the error exponent is. It's straightforward to show that this is better than this scheme up here, okay, where you just decoded every node. So let's visually see what we can do here. So what we have here is the ratio of the error exponent associated with the pass or decode scheme with a concatenated scheme, all right? If we are in this regime here above the dashed line, pass or decode is better, and if we're below here, the concatenated scheme is better. And we're looking at an AWGN channel with 10 nodes and different SNRs. And again, we see something very intriguing here, which is that at low rates down here, the concatenated scheme is better, but at higher rates, pass or decode does better. So if I have the higher rates, actually doing something that you might argue is simpler than the concatenated scheme actually gives us a better trade-off between reliability and delay. So what are the challenges with this? So again, following the homework. The first thing is that we can pose this problem, but determining the optimal thing to do in the pass or decode scheme, of course, what we would really like is some kind of low complexity approach. And it doesn't seem amenable at first blush to some kind of dynamic programming solution. So trying to do things for very large networks or complicated networks seems elusive at this point. And that's really the environment that we want to consider. A number of the real questions that we would like to also consider is the presence of interference. Right? And this is really sort of, the $500 million question with a lot of information theoretic problems associated with networks is how do we incorporate interference? More realistic radios, channel access, etc. So as I said here, in a way, what's hurting us is what hurts everybody, and that is because we have this lack of a unifying information theoretic set of guidelines for general relay networks, we're all sort of stuck, and Michelle talked about this on Monday, and other people have touched on this. One comment that should be made is that if you are willing to do the high complexity problem solution once for pass or decode, you can, in principle, decide what your network topology should be, right? You could just set up all of the possible nodes, look at all possible routes between sources and destinations, and figure out what's the best thing to do. So it has some utility for doing things once, if you will, if you're willing to pay the expense. Okay, so let's shift gears a little bit. Another perspective, I will argue, that we have not considered as much in these multi-hop type networks, especially from the communications point of view, is recognizing that, in fact, we are not dealing with sending single bits across a network, but we want to send multiple bits across the network, or multiple packets. And so a question to ask is, once we've sensed all these observations and we want to send information across the network, how should we schedule things? Right? Scheduling is a problem that has been considered extensively for single-hop systems, but we can't seem to find anything that has been said about multi-hop systems. And luckily for us, the solution turns out to be very simple and very elegant. So loosely, this is the question that we're trying to ask. If I have a packet that I want to send, I have choices as to how much time I want to use to send that packet. If I take a lot of time, the amount of energy that I use is going to be low because of the cost functions that we generally assume. And if I want to send it over a short time, the amount of energy is going to be quite large. And so what we'd like to do is take as much time as possible to minimize our energy consumption, because of course we are in this energy constrained environment. On the other hand, if we have some set of constraints on the problem, like delay constraints, then we have to find out what the optimal trade-off. So a question is, you know, if I come up with this scheme, you know, do I need to know everything about what's happening at every single relay? Do I have to have complete information? The answer, luckily, is no. And then how do I compare with the single hop system? And what we're actually going to see is that even though we're not trying to optimize delay, in the end, our delay is not that much larger than what we would see in a single hop system. And to treat all the different cases that we do, you really need to take a cross-layer approach. So loosely, this is the environment. I have these packets arriving here according to some model. There's some channel state associated with them. And each of these packets, for example, has a delay constraint D in which I need to have scheduled the packet. We can also consider the case where there's one total deadline for everybody. And so these are some of the assumptions that we consider. What I want to focus on, given the fact that we have loose, again talking too much, is the solution. Let me comment that there are different multiplexing options that we consider. We can do time division multiplexing or frequency division multiplexing. TDAM introduces more constraints because, of course, the time slots in which I can schedule my packets is limited because of the TDAM structure, whereas in FDM, things are much more flexible. And this is reflected in the solutions that we get. So here's the key solution point, which I want to emphasize. And that is, the optimal solution tells you to do the following, that it is only the source node that needs to do the scheduling. Every other node in the relay just simply has to receive the packets, buffer them, and send them right away. And this was a bit of a surprise to us, given the flavor of some of the solutions that we had seen. And it's a very elegant proof that Wanxi has come up with. So the key thing here, especially in the context of something like a sensor network, is that only the source node has to think. Everybody else can be stupid and simply say, I've received a packet, let me just send it to where it needs to go. So, and this is independent of the traffic characteristics as well as the channel characteristics.
How many source nodes are there?
Oh, just a single source.
Right.
Yes, exactly. So, Absolutely, if things change, it could complicate things. Although we have started to look at some multi-user solutions, and we think it's not that much, I mean, it may seem like it's going to be significantly more complicated, but it does not appear to be so. I see skepticism, but I'll leave it at that. So we can also make statements about the average packet delay and things like that. So let's take a look at what we get. So again, remember the punchline that I started out with. Multi-hopping is not always the right thing to do. And what we essentially hear is to see the energy ratio or gains that we get, if you will. So what we want to be is in a regime where, where the curve is as small as possible, all right? Because that means that the multi-hopped approach is using less energy than any other approach. And what you see are the three different or four different regimes. This is a very simple network where we have the possibility of four hops. So in this scheme, we use four hops, three hops, two hops, one hop. What we see along the x-axis is essentially spectral efficiency. All right. So as we increase our rates, we actually are better off having fewer hops. The key thing to see here is that in the really constrained case of TDM versus the less constrained case of FDM, the regime in which four hops is optimal is quite large. So these are spectral efficiencies that are very, very high, right? We're looking at 2 and 4. But again, it's a very it depends kind of solution, right? So where you operate depends on the number of hops, your multiplexing mode, rate, delay constraints, et cetera. So one of the questions that we're asking is a multi-user system or multiple source. We'd also like to get closer to that multi-hop cooperative environment. So we want to try to figure out how we can possibly introduce cooperation into this scheme. And there things get a little complicated because it's quite possible that each link in your cooperative multi-hop might have different propagation delays associated with it, and then how do you get things to line up properly? Okay, so how much time do I have, Rob? That's good. Okay, so let me finish up with what I would call a more conventional cooperative multi-hop problem. And so again, we've been talking about predominantly this topology here, all right? And now I want to focus on a sort of strictly communications problem where we're looking at this kind of environment, okay? And so the problem here has to do with pure communication, and what we want to know is how do we get these nodes to cooperate in order to take advantage of the inherent spatial diversity that's present through the use of this network. So you might recall my picture of the antenna array trying to look like, or I should say, the multiple sensor environment trying to look like an antenna array. And that's the problem that we're trying to solve here. So we want to look at the design of distributed signaling. And what I want to start out with is prior work, which is essentially, you know, a number of people have looked at this environment, which I call two hops, source, set of relays, missing destination, but it's there, and have proposed distributed signaling environments and have done analysis. And the upshot of the analysis is, you know, by and large, this is a good thing to do. If I worry about the decay rate of the probability of error, which is this value d here, a very interesting result from Jing and Hasebe is that, you know, for finite but large power, the fact that I do this multi-hopping, and I'm doing a very specific kind of multi-hopping where I'm actually not decoding at the intermediate nodes, but just doing some kind of linear or conjugate processing, that I actually take a hit from the achievable diversity. So for this type of scheme, the maximal diversity I could possibly have is 2. Probability of error decays is p to the minus 2. But because of this two-hop environment, I actually take a middle loss. Now, if I take my power off to infinity, then I'm back to 2, right? That's, of course, not a meaningful environment for us in the sensor network environment. And so we can extend this to 3 hops and more hops, and so this is actually something that we've done. And the comment that I'd like to make here is that if we do an extension of the scheme that was previously proposed by Hua and his colleagues, you get this diversity scheme here, achievable diversity where L is the number of hops, and it's clear that at some point, the number of hops really hurts you, all right? So if I compare 3 hops to 2 hops, which you would think would be better, because of the fact that I'm doing the particular processing that I'm doing, I'm actually worse off in terms of performance at higher SNRs. And so a question you have to ask yourself is, well, gosh, why is this happening, right? I've reduced, we've done that accommodation here where you account for distances, okay? So I'm traversing the same distance with 2 hops versus 3 hops. Why am I doing worse? And is this something fundamental, all right? Can I get away from that? So the reason why I'm doing worse is actually not too hard to explain. Because of the fact that I'm not making decisions at the intermediate nodes, the effective channel that I experience includes products of these complex Gaussian random variables. So this is the classical Rayleigh fading that we have in wireless schemes. So this is, you know, not higher math at all, empirical PDFs of a single Rayleigh random variable, the black one is 2, and the blue one is 3, and you can see essentially the probability of the deep fade, right, the modes of these distributions are moving off towards 0. So the likelihood of me being in a very bad effective channel state is increasing the more I hop, okay? Now, this kind of loss is, I think, inherently fundamental, but the amount of loss I don't think is. And so that is to say, we can design different codes / protocols which will enable us to get around this. So just to scare you a little bit, you can come up with a much better signaling scheme based on more complicated code designs. But the key thing here is that if I use these new code designs to design my protocol, for a 3-hop case, I get a much better diversity here. So I'm still taking a loss, but it's 1 over log p instead of 4 over log p for this previous scheme that has been designed. So the upshot of this is that we need better code designs, right? This is something that we have to do. It's an open question. So what are the hard things about this? And I think this is something, if someone could come up with some of these key distributions, would have a high impact. Performance analysis at finite SNR is hard to do, all right? This is one of the reasons why many of us consider asymptotics either the number of nodes or SNR, et cetera. But for the sensor network environment, extremely high SNR is not the regime that we want to be operating in. We can have modest SNR. So the key question here is, you know, how do we do this? These products of complex Gaussian random variables, we need to come up with a semi-tractable way of talking about those distributions. And there doesn't seem, even though it seems like kind of an obvious thing, we haven't been able to find nice results that tell us about this. So if someone came up with nice distribution descriptions, which would probably be approximations, it would have a large impact. Once we can get a handle on all of this, we can talk about accurate performance characterization, and then we can start to ask ourselves, what's the optimal protocol slash code design that we need to employ in this kind of regime? So, bottom line is, as I said before, multi-hopping is not always a good idea, but I'm going to claim that we're far from trying to figure out what the right regimes are. We have answers to parts of the question, but we really need to bring all of these things together. So it often is a good idea. What are these regimes? There's so many things that we haven't considered yet, and perhaps even the comparisons that we have been making are not completely the right comparisons, because we need to make our comparisons on a network base rather than on a point-to-point communication base. So even when I'm comparing single hop versus multi-hop, this is still a comm theory, send a bit, receive a bit kind of perspective. So this does not take into account the fact that while I'm doing this, perhaps all of these other nodes cannot be doing any kind of communication, because they need to be silent in order for this single hop to work. All right. So what the overall achievable rate is not clear in this kind of environment. And we need to, well, the good news is there's a lot of work that we have to do. And then, of course, I haven't even coupled this with sensing in this particular talk, although we certainly have results on that. Thank you.